We acknowledge that we are on the traditional lands of the Kulin Nation. We pay our respects to elders, past, present, and emerging, and acknowledge the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples' spirit, imagination, and rich history of storytelling and humour that is an inspiration for all Australians.
Welcome back to another episode of The Bearer of Weird News. I know it's been a minute. I had some Fringe Festival shows, that one of which is still actually going, assuming you listen to this straight away. I am your host and head of the anti-podcast Corruption Crusade team, secretly awaiting the day when I also get outed for being a super cheat, Matt Harvey. I'd just like to thank you all for coming back and checking out this episode. If you checked out any of our weird news quizzes in the Fringe Festival, I'd like to thank you for checking those out too. They were incredibly fun. And they are in the podcast feed if you haven't had a chance. If you don't know what those were, do give them a go. We've got some excellent guests on there creating some fun times, some silly times with the news. I am here just up top with a little bit of business. Just a tiny, tiny bit of business. I am going to the Adelaide Fringe Festival. I'm really not sure how it's going to go in this semi-post-COVID Fresh Festival, but South Australia has a burgeoning cluster world, but I'm going to give it a try, and hopefully things will be good. I'll be putting these out as often as I can. Obviously, the world has started returning to normal, so there might be a bit of a delay sometimes, but I will get them out as often as I can, and we'll be doing some more of the quiz for the upcoming Adelaide Fringe Festival, so please, if you're in Adelaide, if you know anyone who's in Adelaide, or if you just want to travel out and see some live shows, come over to the Adelaide Fringe Festival, check out my storytelling show, I Got Bit by a Monkey Once, and my news quiz show, The Weird News Quiz. Now, once again, I will be the bearer of weird news. Let's get into it. A UK spreadsheet error has led to mass misreporting of COVID cases. The event is being referred to as a super spreadsheet event. Almost 20,000 Amazon workers in the US have tested positive for COVID. Almost 20,000 Amazon workers in the US have tested positive for COVID. While the news should be a chilling indictment of Amazon, its workplace practices, and its neglect, the isolating employees are just happy to have a full week where they don't have to take a piss in a bottle. Perpetual bad take generator Alan Jones is suing the SBS and the Feed's Alex Lee for defamation. Lee said in the segment, Jones made a career out of bullying people and spread lies and fake news. But he seems to have forgotten that as a corpse being artificially animated by two young liberals like a Muppet from the darkest timeline as part of their initiation right to get into the party and forced to speak the dark tongue of Murdoch, he can't actually be defamed. It's impossible to defame the dead, and Alan Jones's integrity died a long time ago. Vic MP Will Fowles was caught lifting speech sections from the TV series The West Wing, an embarrassing revelation for any political party, which could only be made worse if the party were taking slogans from the deliberately politically incapable characters in Veep.
Continuity and change. In season 4 of Veep, we came up with the most meaningless election slogan we could think of, now adopted by the Australian PM.
In a world precedent-setting decision, Google says it will pay Australian publishers for views of their news. A spokesperson for Google says, "This is fine. As long as we aren't required to pay our taxes, we're good." Brazil's president, Jair Bolsonaro's efforts to portray himself as an anti-corruption crusader have suffered after police seized banknotes from between the clenched buttocks of one of his allies. The notes, wadded up in the buttocks, were valued at about a Brazilian dollars. It was suspicious to police when they noticed what looked like a healthy mound of pubic hair. Police would have just taken the bribe, but the notes were discovered to be covered in feces, and this wasn't the kind of grease that they wanted on their palm. New biofuel cells have been created that run using salt and spinach. While the tech needs to be scaled, it could be reliable enough to run eco-friendlier factories or cars. Cars would no longer require a combustion engine, and so would run quietly. You would only hear this sound. A man allegedly fired for financial mismanagement, who still became Prime Minister, Scott Morrison, said he is quite surprised ABC staff refused to cut their own pay. Morrison said the cuts were in alignment with the Liberal Party's extended Stop Saying Bad Things About Us campaign, which mostly focuses on taking away money from the national broadcaster for its continued failure to be run by Rupert Murdoch. The ABC staff's decision has been touted as selfish, unlike Morrison himself, who happily took a 0% pay cut when asked back in May, because a true leader always leads by example. An ad seen on the back of a bus in Perth is encouraging job seeker recipients to spend their extra income on a boob job. With a recession looming, it's just good to see someone's looking to increase something other than the number of jobs in the post-COVID economy. Scientists have extracted DNA from insects in amber for the first time. Hey, scientists, we're nearly through this year. Not now. Maybe in 2022, after the Earth has taken a gap year. Son of famous Daredevil, and for the youngins, inspiration for the Toy Story stunt toy Duke Kaboom, Evel Knievel, is attempting his family's most daring stunt yet, attempting to sue Disney for likeness rights violations. I do hope the family has properly prepared for the stunt, or else they will be in court for infinity and beyond! The Northern Territory government has banned an independent news outlet from press rooms, claiming it has frozen out the NT Independent, a news site that covers Northern Territory current affairs and politics, because of grievances with its publisher. Northern Territory Premier Michael Gunner stated, "I don't support web pages sponsored by hate pages," referring to a Facebook page authorized by Northern Territory independent owner Owen Pike. "Look, I know there isn't a lot of choice in Australia, with 70% of the media being owned by the Dark Lord Sauron. Hands down, the worst thing that has ever happened in Australia. And we once lost a war to emus. Look it up. It's a fact, guys." But it's an impossible standard to hold when you say that the local paper is not allowed into the press room because it's run by a terrible guy, but still allow News Corp staff through the door. And don't get me wrong, Owen is awful. The Facebook page in question, which has since been shut down, featured routine and often vexed attacks on Mr. Gunner and his government, and at least one derogatory post concerning a gay nightclub in Darwin, which was deleted from the page after publication. This argument is a position which has been rejected by the country Liberal Party opposition, who assert that the publication should be allowed into the press conferences immediately, although this is to be expected, as the Liberal Party will say anything that is the opposite of the Labour Party. If the Labour Party campaigned on, "This time vote Liberal," they would come out in opposition. It's a real rabbit season, duck season situation up there. The Australian National Audit Office, a Commonwealth agency responsible for uncovering the sports rots and the $27 million overspend on land at Western Sydney Airport, would be forced to cut the number of audits without a budget rescue package. This is according to its own annual report. This is the government's new system for delivering bad news. Ironic reports. Australian National Parks and Wildlife Service staff didn't know that they were on the way out until they had to add themselves to the endangered species list. And Centrelink employees who are being let go will no longer be fired in person, but assigned to set up their own Centrelink status. The song Baby Shark has been used to torture prisoners. Exhausted parents from around the world, currently unable to leave their homes, were heard shouting, "Finally, someone understands what we've been going through." Turns out coronavirus can survive on surfaces such as glass and mobile phones, or stainless steel and vinyl and paper banknotes for up to 28 days without being cleaned. It is also noted that it can also survive months and months within administrations unless they are cleaned out. Australian opposition leader Anthony Albanese wants an Australian CDC, as thankfully former President Trump has compromised the CDC. "We will also be taking over other previously American responsibilities, the bombing of countries for oil, organized coups, and undermining Medicare at all turns." The current front-running names are the CDCC, the Center for Disease Control Cunts, and the Australian Center for Disease Control, or the ACDC. It's a long way to the top if you want disease control. a top-end hay producer, has been granted the Northern Territory's first commercial license to grow industrial hemp. Finally, we have a crop that Australians will be willing to travel to pick. NASA is planning on putting a 4G system on the moon. Originally, they were planning on making it 5G, but we need somewhere to go once the coronavirus makes this planet unlivable for humans. And I heard from some very reliable memes that it might have something to do with 5G. Restaurant Guide and backdoor angry blog Yelp plans to alert users when a business on its platform has been accused of racist conduct, making them a more reliable platform than most of the internet. When someone associated with a business is accused or is the target of racist behavior, Yelp will apply its general public attention alert, kind of like an Amber Alert for racism. But if there's, quote, resounding evidence of egregious racist actions, end quote, by a business owner or employees, such as using racist symbols or slurs, Yelp will apply a business accused of racist behavior alert, a link to a credible news source to provide users more information, or what is more commonly known as the Disney Plus method of mildly painting over a problem with a plaque. If only Disney had bought out Fox News, then they could put a permanent warning in the corner of every Tucker Carlson episode. Kevin Rudd's Murdoch investigation petition has reached a record 500,000 signatures in support of a royal commission into the media monopoly in Australia. Media mogul and darkest timeline monopoly man Rupert Murdoch was seen atop his tower of misinformation as the petition was tabled. I do believe we have a clip.
Is there any in this world with authority to treat with me?
Play-Doh has introduced a range of smells for grown-ups. The smells include overpriced latte, mum jeans, grill king, dad sneakers, and the 2020 exclusive smell, existential anxiety. Okay, let's begin with not learning from history news. The Morrison government, and guys, it's rare we want to give them credit for much, but for this, they deserve it. The Morrison government wants to roll back standards legislated a decade ago, which were intended to stop consumers signing up to unaffordable loans and unsuitable credit products. A decade ago. Why does that sound roughly familiar? A decade ago. After this year, it feels like everything was 1,000 years ago. But that was when we were just starting to recover from a little thing you might remember called the notorious GFC. Brooklyn, baby. Notorious. Yeah, that's right. The global financial crisis. The recession's so nice, we thought we'd do it twice. I would say it's been a few years since we've had an event that unites all of us, but hey, we're still in the midst of a global pandemic. Though, granted, the global pandemic hasn't brought us together, it has in fact made us socially distant. Unless you're shopping at Bunnings, then your normal shopping habits have not
changed. Don't need a medical certificate if you refer to the DH. No, I'm allowed to do this, and you're discriminating.
All this is, according to the Morrison government, is an effort to increase the flow of credit to help kickstart economic activity. The government wants to pare back responsible lending obligations that require Australian credit providers to make inquiries about the customer's financial situation to ensure products are suitable. After all, the Liberal Party is the party of personal responsibility. Unless, of course, it comes to punishing one of their own. For more on this, see my episode about Stuart Roberts or Alan Tudge. Put simply, it requires lenders to check how much a potential borrower is earning and how much they're spending and whether there's enough left over to make their repayments without substantial hardship. Or put even simpler, doing the bare minimum for their job. The idea is something of a slightly different situation to the initial circumstances that brought about the notorious GFC. It's like a reimagining of the notorious GFC. Brooklyn, baby. The Charlie and the Chocolate Factory to the GFC's Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory. The government announced plans to defer due diligence responsibilities from lenders to borrowers, allowing credit providers to rely on the information provided by borrowers unless there are reasonable grounds to suspect the information they are providing is unreliable. I mean, to be fair. And the banks do not deserve a devil's advocate. The banks have proven that they are unreliable at self-monitoring, even when there are massive fines and punishments on the line. So maybe, just maybe, the responsibility should be shifted. I mean, if we have learned anything from this pandemic, it is that people are willing and capable of accepting personal responsibility for their own good and for that of the greater good.
After 4 weeks of stage 4 lockdown, patience is wearing thin.
Banks have complained about the responsible lending obligations regime being too onerous and complicated. But here's the thing. They are trained to do this. This is literally their job. They have not much else to do. But the rest of us, we have other jobs. Jobs that already don't pay us enough to do our own job, let alone having to do the bank's job on top of that. And besides, if it's too complicated for the bank, how are we expected to do it? The Morrison government says the current consumer protection framework has created an atmosphere of excessive risk aversion among lenders, which has restricted the flow of credit. Meanwhile, the government has created an atmosphere of ruthless prosecution, which has restricted the flow of people being able to afford to feed themselves and their families at the same time. But hey, one man's villain is another man's savior. While winding back regulation for some loans and credit products, mostly from the largest and most trustworthy banks, the government plans to strengthen controls on higher risk credit, like payday loans and consumer leases. A move that I actually agree with, but am mildly suspicious of, as it is being brought in by the Liberal Party. A party of magicians who specialise in saying, look over here, with one hand, and preparing the knife that will end you with the other. Now, this was tried 2 years ago, this attempting reforms that were, at the time, stalled, after the backbench rose up under the questionable leadership of Queensland Nationals MP and perpetual bad take machine George Christensen, who claimed he was against it because he turned to small credit lending in his 20s to pay for household goods and unexpected bills when he was hocked to the eyeballs in debt and was wondering, where will people in desperate need then go to access finance? Because presumably he knows that the welfare safety net system may be strong enough to catch you when you are falling, I mean, enough that you don't die, but it will not stop you from breaking an arm or a leg or landing on grandma on the way down. But stop complaining, you whinger. A perpetually broken and rebroken set of limbs, not quite set properly, is much better than being dead. Also, I'm told by the Liberals, continuously, again and again. And they would know, because they have been resurrected from death, and now live as undead minions to their dark masters. Or at least, I assume as much. Otherwise, why would they act the way they do? This is a strange position for the Coalition to take, as it was the Coalition who proposed the reforms to begin with. But I guess they have been impulsively blocking all reforms that might help poor people for so long that they're just blocking it on instinct and not even thinking about who made the suggestion in the first place. It is abundantly clear that the Coalition has been pushing the jobs angle for a long time, and their ruthless slashing of JobKeeper is all part of their brand new job bullying program. Obviously, they are keen to see us all reskill, especially those of us in the arts, with a 130% cost rise to the humanities degrees. But hey, guys, not all of us want jobs in banks, alright? If I'm forced to do this, I will be adjusting my resume accordingly, putting down my experience as being in banking. I already list myself as a former Centrelink employee, as I had to do their fucking job when Robodebt was around, and being a former Centrelink employee is pretty believable at the moment, because they're just so keen to boot them out the door. These reforms are intended to ensure that more small businesses make it through the current recession rather than go into administration as a consequence of the downturn. After all, they can't have businesses dying on their watch. Just let them lend themselves into a new debt based on economic downturn, and then labor can be responsible for the downfall of society. It's simple, really. Simple trickle-down economics where you bake a problem into a system and slowly, over time, the problem just trickles down to the next party, whoever's in power when the problem bursts. Obviously, you want to be out of power when the problem is set to finish trickling. Kind of like pass the parcel, if the parcel was a bomb. Financial Counselling Australia's Fiona Guthrie seemed to crack a little, expressing through gritted teeth in a voice that can only charitably be called Cassandra-ing, wherein, like the famous Cassandra of the myth, one tells in clear and open terms what the consequences of these actions will be, while everyone around them ignores them. Poor old Cassandra. Despite her plethora of successful previous predictions, nobody listens. So Fiona Cassandra'd, as we learnt to our cost during the GFC, weaker lending standards mean people will be loaded up with as much debt as possible. There is significant profit to be made in pushing borrowers to the edge. Now, for those unsure, Financial Counselling Australia is an organisation that helps thousands of Australians every year to pick up the pieces of their financially shattered lives, often after being approved for loans or credit cards that they could never hope to afford. They are mostly financed by the government. Unless the banks are looking for a quick heartwarming story to put in their Christmas letter, then they might send them some finance in order to provide training on domestic and family violence to financial counsellors and capability workers around Australia. Lessons that would be less likely to be needed if the banks weren't so irresponsible with their lending practices in the first place. Like this case, from the year after the notorious GFC. Brooklyn, baby. Where in Los Angeles, California, an unemployed man who once worked for Price Waterhouse and Sony Pictures murdered his wife, three sons, and his mother-in-law before then turning the gun on himself. He left a suicide note saying that he was in deep financial trouble and had considered killing only himself, but he decided it was more honourable to kill his entire family before committing suicide. Now, I don't have any jokes about that. How could I? How could anyone? We've all seen the obvious stupidity of the decision. Consumer Action Law Centre CEO Jared Brody Cassandra'd, none of the big banks opposed the responsible lending laws at the recent House of Representatives Economics Committee hearings. Even the banks are smart enough to know that they can't be trusted. The banks, the ones who were recently busted stealing from the dead, laundering money for terrorists, and knowingly lending to problem gamblers. And that is while there were laws in place that would punish them. It's staggering that anyone would think this is an acceptable way to recover an economy. As if it wouldn't eventually find its way back to life without putting people in peril. Especially these people who are so against making major adjustments to fix something as important as the environment. There is more than one economy, guys. There is only one environment. And on a long enough timeline, there will be a return to equilibrium for both. People will be able to start businesses again. It will be hard, and it will be terrible for a bit, but it will be much harder to try and recover a doomed environment. Sure, the environment will always be there, but it won't always be sustainable for us. But as long as there is us, there will always be an economy. These guys have their priorities backwards, like low-income voters voting for Trump because they see short-term gains, even when the one making the promises has failed to deliver again and again and again.
Are you in a better place than you were 4 years ago?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Is America in a better place than they were 4 years ago?
I believe absolutely.
We have higher unemployment, we have 200,000 people dead due to COVID, and we have riots in the streets.
Yes, let me just tell you this much. Yes, I'm doing much better. I'm literally making four times as much as I was making when Obama was president.
What do you do?
I work for a debt relief company.
Here, we see Senator Rex Patrick, an increasingly crucial crossbencher, saying he is yet to be convinced that relaxing the laws will help the economy. This guy is riding to our rescue/destruction again. The Centre Alliance recently had its entirely too much power over our lives. They are the living embodiment of the Chinese symbol for crisis and opportunity, depending on how they vote that day. Independent Senator Rex Patrick is still on the fence as to whether or not he will support the changes to the National Consumer Credit Protection Act, saying, "My approach to this is one of nervous caution." Not the most reassuring statement from the man whose influence has failed us on getting rid of union-busting laws. We actually had to be saved by a One Nation and Greens alliance in this instance. Can you believe that such a thing would exist? He failed us on ensuring the cost of universities would not be increased, and his former partner, his former alliance partner, Sterling Griff, is responsible for a ban on hentai in Australia. Yeah, just think about that for a second, guys. Even former Liberal leader, and man, you probably didn't know because I had to look him up, and he was around in my lifetime, John Hewson, has rejected this idea. Now, look, guys, as none of us know who he is, let me just contextualize John Hewson for you. In November 1991, the opposition launched a 650-page fight-back policy document, a radical collection of dry, economic liberal measures, including the introduction of a goods and service tax, however, this one was 15%, various changes to Medicare, including the abolition of bulk billing for non-concession holders, the introduction of a 9-month limit on unemployment benefits, various changes to industrial relations, including the abolition of awards, a $13 billion personal income tax directed at the middle and upper class income earners, $10 billion in government spending cuts, the abolition of state payroll taxes, and the privatization of a large number of government-owned enterprises. So he didn't exactly have the best interests of the people at heart. So it is really something for Hewson to slam the Morrison government, proposing scrapping of responsible lending laws, claiming that it could be detrimental to the economy over a long enough term, saying, "I think the basic premise is wrong. Lending might stimulate some short-term spending, but in the end, it has to be serviced. You are stroking a debt monster." Now, for those of you who don't know, Debt Monster was also one of the monsters who worked at Monsters, Inc. He was reserved for when children weren't getting scared enough. He would appear to seniors and people in their early 30s who now have to face up to the realities of their hex debt. More recently, he helped create the algorithm that would be the basis for RoboDebt. Sadly, that put him out of a job, as he had been replaced by automation. Now, tale as old as time, really. Never train your replacement. Moving on to corruption news. New South Wales Premier and everyone's matronly figure, unfairly having her dirty laundry aired in public, Gladys Berejiklian, has been the centre of a public scandal that has distracted from the public scandal within the scandal. It's the babushka doll of New South Wales political scandals. While it is very publicly known that Berejiklian engaged in a relationship with former Wagga Wagga MP and awkward stepdad who has become much too accustomed to doing things a certain way, Darren Maguire, while everyone jumped on the neighbour subplot that was their relationship, which, granted, has brought us some real pictures into the nature of being in a relationship with Gladys, such as the time that she said their relationship was not worth mentioning, it is distracting us from a very important note, which is that 95% of the council grants that she gave out have been going to Liberal seats. In what is looking to be the New South Wales equivalent of the federal sports world scandal, senior ministerial staff will front a parliamentary committee inquiring into the allocation of $252 million under the Stronger Communities Fund. Just a handful of emails from the office of the Premier and that of her deputy, John Barilaro, are all that evidences how the $252 million was allocated to councils in the months before the 2019 state election. There are no assessments, no guidelines, and in one case, a council, Hornsby Shire Council, was apparently asked to apply after it was given the grant. That was a $90 million grant. Now, the government insists there are no other documents. She has, however, denied signing off on projects, and Berejiklian defended the grants program in Parliament, saying the funding initiative delivered untold benefits to local communities. Presumably because nobody was keeping documents about the money, how it got there, and what it was used on. So what could she have signed? The massive grants program was originally established to help councils that amalgamated to bear the costs of bringing their operations together and to placate unwilling councils with money for community projects. But the government's plan to merge councils was put to a stop due to successful legal challenges, and then it abandoned the policy, which left that $252 million just sitting there. So it was repurposed as grants for councils. But the criteria for the receiving of these grants, well, that remains a big old mystery.
Well, gang, it looks like we've got a mystery to solve.
The emails do show that both the Premier's and the Deputy Premier's offices issued directions to the Office of Local Government about how the grants should be publicised. Barilaro's Deputy Chief of Staff, Laura Clark, told the Local Government Office not to worry about a press release for an announcement for funding for Cootamundra Gundagi Regional Council, saying that Steph Cook would do it in-house. Another, from the Premier's office, directed the Office of Local Government not to contact the Central Coast Council about the successful grants until the release went out from the state government. Seems documents related to the $252 million worth of New South Wales government grants was physically shredded. Two senior staffers for Berejiklian have testified before a New South Wales parliamentary committee that is inquiring into the Stronger Communities Fund. More than 95% of the fund's grants have been given to coalition seats, many of which were decisions made without signed paperwork or reasoning. The committee did hear that Sarah Lau, a senior policy advisor to Berejiklian, sent multiple emails about the grants that said that the Premier had approved and that the Premier had signed off further funding. But Lau later testified that this was just a turn of phrase, and Berejiklian did not actually approve the funding. Man, you gotta love these Canberra bubble sayings. Something that sounds like something but means nothing. Something like, have a go, you get a go, or the party of good economic management. You know how it is. Lau said it would have been more accurate to say that Berejiklian confirmed she was comfortable with the proposed projects. The truth is, she was not approving any payments under the grants program. That was not a role that she had under the program. So if her job isn't to approve the grants, why is she being consulted? Drag the scapegoat out here whose job it is to approve those grants and to put it in writing that they are approved, in order to keep your boss's nose clean. Even the mafia knows to keep the boss away from anything that can tie them to a crime. Come on, this is crime 101. If you're going to mimic professional criminals, do a proper imitation. Otherwise, it's just insulting and maybe borderline racist. Lau has said that Berejiklian indicated that she was comfortable with the grants through a series of working advice notes, which have now been shredded and deleted, which is very specific and a little bit worrying. In a submission to parliamentary inquiry into government grants, the Chief Commissioner of the Corruption Watchdog said, depending on the specific circumstance, it could be corrupt conduct for a minister to urge a public servant who has responsibility for grants to make certain decisions. So, then, the Independent Commission Against Corruption Chief Commissioner Peter Hall said that if the minister is not the appointed decision maker, directing or urging a public servant to make a decision preferred by the minister could be considered corrupt conduct. And Mr. Harris has warned that the shredding of documents related to the council grants was likely to be unlawful. In which case, the notes are more to be considered guidelines, really. Illegal guidelines. After all, it's not like there was a recent billion-dollar scandal in which the meticulous nature of note-keeping and details was absolutely necessary in order for you to prove that you are not misusing government funds and that the standards that the people live by should be even stricter when it comes to those who serve the people. Otherwise, that'd be somewhat hypocritical, right? Look, maybe until they learn to behave themselves, we need to put these state premiers on some sort of card, some sort of cashless welfare card system until they can demonstrate reasonable and responsible management of their affairs, including financial affairs. Or at the very least, be making them live up to the outrageous expectations of the very bare minimum required of their job, as we see here, looking over the Premier's website for cabinet business management. We've got cabinet minister set of minutes and agendas and reports, submissions and other meeting papers, including the master set of submissions and briefs, which were made to cabinet by government agencies or attachments or additional papers that support the information given in the submission or the brief, and records documenting the decisions made by the cabinet. These would be submissions made and briefs provided regarding government policy to either seek approval from cabinet or to advise cabinet on the issues surrounding a policy or a proposed policy need to remain permanently in the state archives. Looking down at 1.2.2, the cabinet duplicate copies of minutes, agendas, reports, submissions, and other meeting papers can be temporarily destroyed after an action has been completed. But in 1.2.3, cabinet records documenting and monitoring the research and preparation of cabinet and cabinet committee submissions and briefs, which includes background information reports, working drafts, progress reporting, notes of verbal briefings and consultations and interviews during development, and other documentation that supports the policy officer in assessing and creating the submission or the brief, needs to remain permanently in state archives. You cannot be shredding things that create documents that go through cabinet. I mean, they really need to be held to the standards of these so-called lazy Australians who are refusing to work because of the high standard of living that the coronavirus supplement has given them. After all, these guys get paid way more than the $550 a week that the coronavirus has provided, and yet they're still refusing to do their job. I mean, what's it going to take to get these guys to do their job? But here's some breaking news, and a future comedy of errors for a Veep-style show in Australia. Turns out Gladys Berejiklian was a spy for her old beau Daryl's office. Yeah, that's right. After these revelations, seems Gladys has all the makings of being a low-energy Bond figure. She's deceitful, double-dealing, and keeps her love affairs low-key, even lying to them in order to maintain the advantage, as evidenced by the information she told ICAC about her relationship with Maguire being not a relationship of sufficient status. Oh, oh, we just gotta like a sting the old heart there, right, Maguire? However, to Maguire, in phone taps, she described him as her numero uno and hokus, which is apparently an Armenian word meaning beloved. You can expect to see her starring in one of the following films from the production house of Weird News: Gold Fibber, Lie Another Day, Doctor No Such Relationship Exists, From Wagga With Love, You Only Lie Twice, Live and Let Lie, For Your Lies Only, Golden Lie, No Time to Lie, and the final installment, Lie Fall. All soundtracks will, of course, be completed by Shannon Knoll in the true Australian tradition. But let's zoom out to the macro level. Seems that Labor and the Coalition are joining forces to weaken political donation laws. The changes would allow property developers and political parties to ignore state laws requiring their donations be disclosed. However, in New South Wales and Queensland, donations of $1,000 or more still need to be disclosed. So that's currently what's going on. Under the new federal laws, only donations of $14,300 or more made by property developers for federal purposes need to be disclosed. And in all honesty, I am not convinced that filling my ever-deepening pockets counts as for federal purposes, but I bet somebody's going to attempt to argue it. And very likely, what's going to happen is we're just going to see a bunch of donations of $14,299, and no one will ever know what they were used for. This is seemingly in opposition of the new draft law that brings a national corruption watchdog one step closer. Now, this would be because, according to the Canberra Times, Home Affairs corruption notifications have risen to the highest level since the department's creation. The law enforcement watchdog has seen a substantial increase in corruption notifications related to the Department of Home Affairs over the past year, but said that it reflected growing maturity rather than rampant misconduct. To put that simply, to translate for those who are not paying that much attention, they don't think that there's an increase in corruption. No. They are just getting better at finding the corruption which already exists, which puts them ahead of detective team and returning punchline, Mystery Inc., who still had to spend a full 22 minutes each episode trying to figure out that it was another corrupt industrialist or failed capitalists.
And it would have been mine if it hadn't been for those meddling kids.
Just to give you a proper idea of what they consider not rampant misconduct, the Australian Commission for Law Enforcement Integrity said it received 172 notifications of potential corruption, with 167 of those relating to bodies under the Department of Home Affairs umbrella. Of those 167, 100 fell under Home Affairs, which includes the Australian Border Force, and a further 63 relating to the Australian Federal Police, and the remaining 4 for the Australian Criminal Intelligence Commission. So overall, you know, not that big a deal. I guess they have to look at it this way, because if they didn't have like 172 notifications, then they'd lose funding and they'd be out of a job, right? So one hand washes the other. The report noted that there were 2 key trends influencing corruption in law enforcement agencies: loyalty to workforce in groups. Yeah, that's the sort of rampant behaviour that's been highlighted in the Black Lives Matter movement, where good cops are driven out by bad cops, or seemingly good cops at least, feel like they have to behave badly, otherwise the bad cops will reject them. And also exploitation of processes for personal benefit, because hey, everyone's doing it. You know what it's like. Everyone in the office is ordering a pizza and you just go with the flow. You take a slice. You're out with the boys, you're ordering some corruption, you might just take a slice of that too. Ah, come on, everybody's doing it. The proposed bill would give the Integrity Commission the capacity to tap public servants' phones. We'll introduce new crimes, and in my opinion, if they really want to get some results, then they should introduce a yearly awards system. Like the Logies, but for politics. Yeah, you can have some fun categories. Best negotiation, most votes gained, most votes lost, best new party. Hey, we can even introduce a best and fairest medal for politicians. Give them a trophy, make them feel special. We can name it the Whitlam Memorial Medal for best and fairest. And what might be fun is if we give out the equivalent of a Razzie Award, worst and unfairest. We can call it the Abbott Memorial Medal. After all, he did want knighthoods to return, so here's an honour, just for him. The awards committee can be run by the ICAC with assistance by the Walkley Foundation. I think it'd be a great time. Moving on now to nationalised social media news. question has been posed recently in the news. If Facebook and Google were to limit their services in Australia, could the ABC run a social network? It'd be a publicly funded social network run by the ABC. You may have heard that Facebook has warned that it will block Australians from sharing news if the landmark plan to make digital platforms pay for news content becomes law. I mean, the good news is that this will limit the amount of false news that your aunt and uncle can share, unless someone circumvents this by the devious act of maybe taking screenshots or making memes. Fortunately, those things aren't very popular, so that won't happen. There is no word yet on blocking conspiracy theories. However, I suppose we'll just have to wait and see how much money that they can make by allowing them to run wild over their platform before we decide to discuss it. Google, however, has already just accepted that the change is coming and that they're going to be paying for news. Putting an end to the question, which overreaching digital corporation stealing your private data is worse? To be fair, it wasn't much of a fight. It's like comparing HPV to HIV. Sure, they're both things that we can't get rid of, but thanks to advances in medicine, only one of these things will have devastatingly negative impacts on everyone you contact for the rest of your life. Now, the fun thing for you, the listener, is you get to decide which is which in this simile. It's a choose-your-own-destruction novel, and I'm fully invested. The proposal for the platform hosted by the ABC is among a raft of risk mitigation proposals in a report commissioned by the Center for Responsible Technology. They called it Texit. Can Australia survive without Google and Facebook? A terrible title for a report. If I had handed in a report with the portmanteau Texit, I'd be dropped to an automatic C for not using real words. And that's if I wasn't exiled from class forever. Exit. Pursued by an F. The proposed platform would supposedly connect the community without harvesting data in the way that Google and Facebook do. A proposal that I am inclined to believe, as the ABC know nothing about the people who use their service, as is evidenced by the fact that if they did, they wouldn't have made so many series with Chris Lilley, and we would be on season 30 of Round the Twist. The major plus being that the ABC has a charter of behaviour, which would no doubt be strictly adhered to when posting on the ABC social network. They want us to believe that they could rely on the wide reach of the ABC across local, regional, and national communities, as well as the trust invested in the institution by the public. Trust in the ABC? Now that's a bit of a novelty. The Conservatives don't trust it because it has a reputation for being too left-wing, aka not being Sky News after dark, and progressives are questioning of it as it is at the constant dread of having its funding slashed even more, and so lobs softball questions at the incumbent political party in video spaces and saves all their hard criticisms for the place that nobody is looking, beyond the headline of an article. An ABC platform which engages the community, allows for genuine exchange and influence on decision making, and applying principles of independent journalism and storytelling would provide real value to the local communities starved of civic engagement. That's according to the report. Now government would be uniquely placed to handle such demands after the raging success of their MyGov and ATO sites at the beginning of the pandemic, after the huge success of the census and the Queensland homeschooling websites. Good to see where all our money is going. The ABC barely gets funding to run a TV/news outlet, let alone the added cost of running as a social media platform. The only way it could possibly prove viable would be to run a collection plate of pieces of information that could be purchased by interested parties who are looking to better promote their products, possibly putting the ABC in violation of a number of laws, depending on which government was in charge and if they got to benefit, which would finally make the ABC capable of making money without selling ads, well, at least without directly selling ads, finally making it what the libs have been pushing for years. So look, maybe, just maybe, a social media platform may be the only way that it sees any funding. At least we could use the money to develop quality local TV shows that nobody would watch until they were remade by an overseas outlet and then sold back to us. We should develop viable alternatives to Google and Facebook, such as national online social platform hosted through the ABC. This could be built on existing ABC digital capabilities and projects such as Australia Talks, Triple J Unearthed, and the discontinued ABC Open. This was done just 2 weeks after Wynn announced the closure of 4 of its regional newsrooms. ABC Open was a platform for community-led regional and rural stories, encouraging users then to use Instagram and the ABC My Photo platform instead, of a platform that nobody has ever heard of and nobody knows what it does. ABC Open wasn't promoted or supported by the ABC for more than a year, but the stories it produced, which number nearly 193,000, had still been hosted in one place on a dedicated website. Sounds a lot like the fate of MySpace, if you ask me. Look, for starters, if you're going to run a successful social media platform, you need to decentralize. It's essential. How else can Facebook avoid paying taxes if it wasn't headquartered in Ireland, despite doing most of its business in the US? Secondly, you can't really build on something that's been discontinued now, can you? That would require both continuity and change. A statement so oxymoronic, it could never possibly be touted as something to be taken seriously. Certainly not in a political party context. Now, you could argue that something was rebooted, reimagined, or maybe a requel, which is a new term I'm floating, where we pick an arbitrary point in the timeline, pretend that nothing has happened beyond that point, and create a new sequel. The filmic equivalent of sticking your fingers in your ears and shouting, la 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 la, I'm not listening. But you'd be hard-pressed to call it building upon. I mean, you don't want to DCEU your social network before it's even started. The government has been urged to develop a stronger Consumer Data Privacy Act ahead of the likely removal of Facebook functions and the potential scenario of Google withdrawing Google from the country. I mean, a possibility that is so unlikely that even countries that actively reject Google, like China, have been solicited by Google to negotiate their own version of the search engine, Google. If Facebook leaves the country, the major threat to people's data will actually be gone. Well, if you don't account for Australian MPs just giving our data away willy-nilly and quite illegally. The report says that if Facebook refused to allow Australians to share news, the site would be flooded with misinformation and fake news. As opposed to now, when it is only flooded for a couple of days before Facebook reluctantly gets up and sighs and says, alright, I'll put up a warning. To prepare consumers for the impact of the removal of services provided by powerful foreign-owned technology companies, the government should invest heavily in Australian technology and startup companies, according to the report. I mean, we didn't even think it was worth investing in a proper NBN, really only recently backflipping on the development of it, although the government firmly states that this was not at all a backflip, rather it was a reverse front flip. The Australian government's attempt to curb the market dominance of Google and Facebook is one of several similar moves across the globe, including legal action in France, an antitrust suit against Google in the US, and the possibility of another in China. Which to me is just hilarious because come on, China. You think Google are overreaching? Have you looked at your own past, or at least the version of your own past that you allow people to see? The report also urges a forensic investigation into how tech companies such as Google have become all-powerful in core public sectors, including education, health, and government administration. Inevitably, some things will change as the ABC is exposed to the influence of the global internet. Play School will continue to fall under the rotten influence of the loony left as it becomes No Jab, No Play School. But their influence will be undercut, or balanced, if you will, by B1 and B2 as they form their own online support group, the Proud Bananas, the first unofficial alt-ABC group. They don't believe that just bare lives matters. No. All flora and fauna lives matter. And finally, is this art news? A Melbourne artist who is documenting the live streaming of their attempts to self-inseminate with donor sperm has had their funding rescinded by the Australia Council, which said it would not support the project that could bring new life into the world. Look, Australia Council, I know 2020 has been a downer of a year, but maybe we don't turn the faucet off on humanity just yet. Maybe give them a couple more years. I figures that this would be a Melbourne artist though, as the only state that continuously votes Greens, they are showing that they still believe in a future. And that future is multiple choice. Your choices are A. Mad Max, but with Tesla cars. B. Waterworld, where the only livable space is islands built by China. Or the Free Republic of the Great Pacific Garbage Patch. Or C. Doomsday Bunker Whack-A-Mole, with a special guest spot by Radioactive Zombies. Whichever it is that the Greens say that they're on board with, we'll be there. The federal government's major arts funding and advisory body has previously approved funding for Immaculate, the name of the piece, way back in early August. And this was after being told what the project involved. That being live streaming and documenting the attempt to artificially inseminate the artist. But a week later, the council sent the artist, Casey Jenkins, a transcript of a heavily critical segment on Sky News by former Tony Abbott advisor, Peter Credulin, and called in lawyers. Ooh. Continuing Australia's fearless approach to artistic exploration, which has previously included such large-scale projects as slowly choking the life out of the arts industry live and in real time so Australians can watch the life drain out of its eyes as they complain that we never make any good music, movie or TV in this country. The mixed medium collage entitled Democracy Shrugged, mostly consisting of the Weekend at Bernie'sing of the emptied husks of news companies by Rupert Murdoch and the News Corp puppet show Spectacular, masquerading as free thought, as the empty eyes of anchors and journalists scream that they are indeed real boys and girls while singing the company song, I've Got No Strings on Me, and a $6.8 million cube made by an American artist. So good to see that they're keeping their investments local. Having activated the Credulin alarm, they then panicked, lest they get noticed as a continually functioning arts body in Australia and then get themselves defunded like the ABC.
Don't move! Can't see us if we don't move.
As such, they have cancelled the $25,000 grant in a letter to Jenkins from the Australia Council Chief Executive Adrian Collette, who told Jenkins that the ethical issues that will inevitably surround this project, possibly for years to come, are not something the council can take responsibility for. Sounding more like an articulate version of every dodgy dad in a TV show than a body of arts council fearlessly defending its own mission statement in Australia. We expect and anticipate that our artists will exercise our freedom of expression and be fearless, take risks, and develop and present inspiring work across national and international borders. The letter also bravely stated, through quivering lips, that the project exposes the Australia Council to unacceptable, potentially long-term and incalculable risk as it cowered behind its desk pillow fort. Sounds like the Australia Council is just afraid that they are going to grow up to be responsible for this child, and that maybe this child will come at them for like parenting fees in the form of a grant. The council said negative media coverage was not a factor in its decision, going on to say it mostly feared negative government coverage, having to defend a choice it made, and clowns. They're just unsettling, and thus will never receive Australia Council funding. Ever. Peter Credulin called the project the tip of the iceberg of sheer abuse of taxpayer grants, which is definitely different from the $40 million in taxpayer dollars that went to Foxtel in the past 6 years. Or the taxpayer money funding that Sky News program Mundane Means Business, run by former Labour Party president turned to the dark side Warren Mundine, which received approval for government funding for a second season before his application had even been sent, in a not at all suspicious use of public funds just months before it became a Liberal Party candidate. Huh, interesting. Now, if you're unsure, Sky News is Fox News, if Fox News remembers to take its medication, but Sky News After Dark is its own beast, described by Sky News host Paul Murray as, you can say Sky News at night is a liberal echo chamber. These revelations put me in a disappointing agreement with one Dr. Bella Diabria, director of the right-wing think tank, the Institute of Public Affairs, who has said, Australians really need to question where their money is going. And I would agree. We would need to question where our money is going, or else it might go to funding outrageous projects like refugee detention centres. And that would be an atrocious violation of human rights to have your money tied to, let alone these outrageous art scandals. It's bizarre that the conservative government mouthpiece that is Sky News would be so afraid of bringing another baby into the world, when normally they take a very conservative stance on stopping ladies from having babies. Jenkins, the artist, remember, even said during subsequent discussions about the funding, a senior Australia Council staff member warned, "We have a very conservative Prime Minister." And fearlessly exercising your expression to take risks, in his opinion, is to fearlessly continue to invest in a coal industry despite the negative press. At least I hope his whole career has been some sort of Andy Kaufman style performance piece where his whole goal is to get people to walk out on the Liberal Party. They have misunderstood the piece and have stayed and cheered instead. This has got to be why he's so angry at the arts, right? His whole life has just been a failed artistic piece. Guys, thank you. You've made it to the end. Thank you so much every time. I'm so thankful, those of you who make it to the end. Thanks for listening. Thank you for your time. I hope that I've helped you through some sort of mundane or tedious task like getting to work or doing your job. And that if you enjoyed it, you please pass on word to others. Maybe rate and review us on iTunes or wherever it is. Oh, iTunes doesn't exist anymore. Apple Podcasts or wherever it is that you listen to this, rate and review us, share it with a friend. If you have time, come out to see one of my shows, and hopefully you're all keeping well, keeping safe. A lot of us are returning to work now, and I know that that's a complicated thing. I've had to do it myself, so watch out for yourselves. Be careful on public transport if you're still taking it. Stay safe, wash your hands, and be good to each other.